Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, November 2nd, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
Good. So this is a big week, not so much for MBA admissions. I'll let you run that down. But obviously, this podcast comes out on Monday, and Tuesday is election day in the United States. So I guess people are probably pretty focused on that, at least the Americans, and maybe other people too. Are you allowed to vote in the U.S. or did you, I can't remember if you have U.S. nationality or not.
No. My green card and now living in the U.K. did not provide me opportunity to vote.
Got it.
But I'm hoping everybody gets out to vote because that's our democratic right. So that's absolutely fantastic. And best of luck, everyone. And it'll be exciting to see what the result is. And absolutely, it impacts us all around the world.
Yeah, agreed. So what's going on, though, on the NBA front? Like, is there anything happening this week? You mentioned to me that it might be a quieter week.
Yeah, I mean, this upcoming week, we've got a couple of application deadlines. Georgetown, I think, is one of them. INSEAD has a deadline, too. But we're definitely at the tail end of round one application deadlines. This last week, we had a lot of activity on Livewire. Actually, as we're recording this podcast now, which is, as listeners recognize, is a few days before it actually gets broadcast, Wharton's interview invites are rolling out. We saw them start to roll out just before we went to record. Sloan, MIT Sloan, is also supposed to have released interview invites last week, over the next couple of days. I imagine that'll happen. And Duke released its early action round decisions, final decisions.
Yeah.
We got a lot of activity on Livewire, Graham, a lot.
Yeah, it's great to see, a lot of good news with Duke and, just to see those Wharton interview invitations coming out. The school, they did it about an hour later this year than last year. So I think that, people were kind of worried like, uh-oh, we're going to have to wait all day or what. But they did get them out. In other news, we've done a couple more real humans. So NYU and Tuck are now up on the site. And we keep doing these class profiles as well, which are, we just look at the class of 2022. Who got into business school last season? And we did one for Booth recently that was pretty interesting. There's a couple like housekeeping issues. So one of them, I really need people.
Yeah, but before we get into that, Graham, in terms of these class profiles, not to put you on the spot, but have you learned anything, seen any trends in terms of digesting them across the different schools?
Well, I mean, what's fascinating to me is how it just seems like the pandemic has had a really varying impact on programs. So, you have some programs where like the percentage of international students like plummeted, which, you could totally understand because people deferred or they couldn't get to the program to join. And so you see some schools where there's a drop in the percentage of internationals. But then other schools like kept things pretty steady. And then you have schools like Harvard where the class is literally 200 students lighter than it normally is because they, allowed everyone to defer. So it really seems to have impacted schools in very different ways. There's some schools who had these added rounds who ended up with like a ton of applications and put together a really great class. I think Tuck was one of those, right? So it's just interesting to see like how it was not evenly like it, and I think some of that may be related to whether or not schools had the ability to extend deadlines and get excess applications in or not.
Right.
I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that as to why it seems to not be impacting schools in the same way?
Yeah, no, I think it didn't impact schools in the same way. Just as you said, schools took different decisions on how to handle the pandemic, and those that had the flexibility and the freedom to extend those deadlines were able to actually get some folks in last season that were actually targeting this season, and they just decided to pull the trigger early.
Yeah,
clearly because of the uncertain economy as a result of the pandemic. I think what we're also seeing, and we've heard this a lot now, so whether it's absolutely true or not, it's getting closer to being fact, is the number of applications in the pool for this season looks like it's up. I reckon for sure in top European programs, but I would imagine in the States too, and the number of seats available is down.
Right.
And we've talked about this before with those that sort of were able to get deferrals. So seats are down, apps are up. It is a tough, tough season to apply this season, Graham.
Yeah, agreed. And we know from David Simpson over at LBS that they, you know, they London Business School delayed their interview invitations by a week because they just had such volume of applications.
Or at least we're suspecting that's why they did it, right?
I think. I mean, but, it has to be something related to that. And we see other... We see other schools. I mean, I've talked to some of the admissions directors at, you know, top schools in the U.S., and I am hearing volume is up a bit. Not like 50% or anything, but it's up. And so we'll see. As you correctly state, we'll know more in, you know, the coming weeks when the numbers kind of solidify. I guess I'm kind of curious to know what's going to happen in round two. Will this be sustained or not? Or is it just that everyone's in a rush to kind of apply early and you know, we'll see it sort of dip back down or something?
Yeah, you can make the argument that round one has gotten a little bigger, especially if there are folks that have been laid off due to the pandemic that might have naturally fallen in the round two with work commitments and so forth. Those folks would have probably pushed their applications all into the earlier round. So yeah, I think that's a good point. Round two might not be as dramatic in terms of total numbers, but we'll see. It's fascinating, quite honestly, Graham. I mean, right, you know, 6 months ago as we started talking about the pandemic on wiretaps and its implications on the MBA admissions, I would never have imagined that we'd be discussing the back end of October, early November, the continuation of this pandemic, the second wave that's hitting in many areas of the world, and ultimately how that's going to add to this changing dynamic. I mean, there's still so much uncertainty out there in terms of, you know, folks that start their MBA program next season, you know, in August.
Yeah.
What's that going to be like?
I know.
I mean, we cannot presume everything will be back to normal.
Yeah. And I personally, I'm getting impatient. You know, it's been sort of like, it was okay to put your life on hold for a little while, right? But it's, I recognize, I think a lot of us are frustrated and hoping that we can find a path forward. But in any event, a couple of housekeeping items, and then we'll get into the wiretaps portion. As always, you've picked out a handful of really great candidates to discuss. We are doing our big fall applicant survey right now. And that is a survey that we do on clearadmit.com to find out, you know, what, you know, how do you, the MBA applicant, get your information? What do you look to do? How do you pick schools? All the sort of stuff that goes into applying to business school. And, you know, how do you want to hear from schools? And we love to gather that research and then share it in the industry. So please fill out that survey if you can. It's sort of everywhere on the site, but you can also get to it by just going to bit.ly/survey/fall2020. And that's all one word. So we really need your help. So if you could fill that out, that would be great. We also have our essay workshops coming up a little bit later this month on November 11th and November 18th. And those are going to be a lot of fun. We're going to sit down with a handful of schools and discuss their essay questions and really, you know, just kind of drill down into what they're looking for. And it's just going to be super focused. And the schools that we've got signed up as of this very moment are, let's say, I guess we've got Michigan, UT Austin, Georgetown, Berkeley, INSEAD, Cornell, UNC, and I believe we're going to get London Business School. So there's some more that may come online. It's just super exciting, and I love doing these. And Alex, you and I are both going to be taking part in this round of them, so I'm looking forward to that. The last thing we've got is the data dashboard. As many of you know, we launched that back in late September, and it's just been so much fun. I've had a lot of fun using it, and it's just a way for you to dig deep into all the data that we've got from over the years in Livewire, so you can find out, you know, who gets interview invitations, what, you know, all kinds of scatter plots with GPAs and GMAT and GRE scores and stuff. So check it out. It's $20 for a month or $50 for the entire admission season. It's a year subscription in that case. So check out the Livewire data dashboard. Anything else, though, Alex, before we dive in on the wiretap stuff?
No, but it did remind me, Graham, and I know this is a bit of a side conversation and we're running a little long on time, but with those Duke admits that we saw on Livewire last week, lots of folks are taking this EA test.
Yeah, the executive assessment. Yeah.
The executive assessment test. So we actually need to upgrade our tech so people can put EA and then the score.
Yes.
And we might also need an admissions tip in terms of explaining to everybody what is that test.
Yeah, and it's a test that was created by GMAC, the makers of the GMAT exam, yeah. And they created it for the EMBA space. But in the pandemic and everyone kind of, you know, scrambling, there was, you know, schools started to say, you know what, we'll accept the EA as well if you've got one. And I think there are some schools that were already doing that. You know, I can't remember if it was maybe Chicago or there's some schools out there that I know were doing it before. But it seems like since the sort of pandemic hit and standardized testing, access to standardized testing has been a bit more challenging, many schools are kind of saying, hey, if you got a test, we'll take it. Just, you know, send us what you got. And so the EA has been added into the kind of full-time yeah. MBA mix.
But it was more than a handful of folks that I saw last week on the Duke discussions that had been admitted with that test. So yeah. I was quite surprised. I guess my point is it's being adopted pretty quickly.
Yes.
By yeah. the applicant pool.
Yep, makes sense. So let's move on. We'll talk about the candidates here. So this one is, let's see, I've got Wiretaps candidate number one. This person's applying to six schools. They are Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, MIT, UVA, and Yale. And they want to begin their MBA program next fall. They've been working in consulting, and they want to pivot out into tech. And the companies they've got on their list are Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Tesla. GMAT score for this candidate is a 760, GPA 3.5, and they have 3 years of work experience. They're currently in Chicago, but they would love to land in the Northeast, and they specify like Boston, Philly, DC, or New York. I will mention that they open their kind of notes section of their post by saying, hi, Alex Graham and others. So they're actually addressing everyone, which I really appreciate. I'm sure that our other people on the site like that too. And they wrote, I love the podcast. I've been listening since before Wiretaps and never miss an episode. So that's commitment right there. This person's a white male. I don't know if I mentioned that before. And they went to a top 10 U.S. undergrad, non-Ivy though. And they studied engineering and econ. They gave us a ton of information about their work, and you had some back and forth, or at least you gave them something. I think you wrote a comment. So what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, this candidate's concern is, I guess, their 3 years of work experience without really specializing in a particular sort of industry or whatever it might be in a specific field or whatever. And whether that's going to hold them back. I mean, they got a 760 GMAT, Graham. So obviously they're wicked smart. They've got a 3.5 GPA with an engineering discipline, which again is got to be pretty pretty decent. Obviously has a smattering of econ in there too, so we've got to like that. Their goals are in ed tech. I like that. It's again, we've talked about ed tech on several occasions now. It's definitely a field that has become more and more interesting, especially with this pandemic. That's sort of going to spur a lot of innovation in ed tech, no doubt in my mind. And I think their plan for their goals is good, right? Their short-term goal is to go into tech directly before then potentially, I think, in the longer run, maybe doing some sort of entrepreneurial stuff in ed tech or whatever it might be. I do find it quite funny when you said that their goals are in tech, and then you list three or four tech companies and then the largest automaker on the planet. But obviously that's also a tech company, right? So, I mean, times are clearly changing in terms of how we label these organizations. But that all said, I would say, and I'll throw this back to you, Graham, if this person can do a really good job of articulating their passion for their goals, that can help them overcome this shorter work time frame, right? So you're like only 3 years or whatever, but I really know exactly what I want to do, and this is why it makes sense absolutely now to start moving towards that plan, right? I think you got lesser time of experience. You've really got to show that passion for understanding your next steps and so on and so forth. If they can obviously show impact at work, which I think they can do that, you know, quite frankly, Graham, I think that they're not overly ambitious in terms of their school selection.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the numbers here are great. They went to a good school, challenging, you know, kind of undergraduate curriculum. I'm not so worried about this candidate. I think that, yeah, they clearly need to nail down the goals and understand, like, how does working for, you know, say Apple or Facebook then lead to this ed tech plan that they have. But I'm not so worried. I think it sounds like they've, you know, done pretty well at work. And so I'm optimistic. I will say that the comment you made about how the times have changed, and here they have Tesla on the list. That's an automaker. It's not a tech company, or is it? You know, so I did a fascinating interview recently with an executive director of career services at a leading MBA program, and that's going to be forthcoming. There will be a podcast with that discussion, and we talked all about post-MBA careers, and he made the point to me about how, you know, people say they want to work in tech. Well, you know, that doesn't really mean anything, you know, because you could go to Google and work in finance, or you could work in marketing, or you could work in HR, or, you know, product management or product development. So he's sort of like, these are just companies like any other. And he's like, similarly, you could go to a quote non-tech company. I think the example he used was like Whirlpool, which makes appliances or something. And you could be very focused on the sort of all the tech that goes into, you know, the customer experience. And I think he's referring to like the connected home, or, you know, there's different ways, you know, tech is kind of permeating everything. Right. But we digress, or I digress, I guess, but I'm not worried about this guy's work experience. I think it'll be okay. And I also should mention that he had, where is it? Yeah. He does board game design as a hobby, which I was kind of like, I've never seen that before. That's kind of cool. And he's got a bunch of, you know, activities. So I feel like this is a well-rounded candidate with, you know, very solid academics and should be good to go. I was wondering, he mentioned that he likes rural schools, and I wanted to tease out, like, why is that? Is that like a pandemic-induced preference? Is it just wanting to be off in the woods somewhere? Or is it really just about finding a close-knit community, which is often synonymous with these more, you know, kind of non-urban schools or something. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, but I was thinking, gee, you know, my experience at Wharton was one of, you know, it being an incredibly close-knit community because no one was really from Philadelphia who attended. And that's what kind of makes the community. And, you know, so I don't know what this person's, what's driving that rural interest. But I'd encourage them to really think that through, because they could maybe, you know, throw a school like Wharton on the list and be perfectly reasonable in having them on the list. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that point, I mean, I believe, and I don't have the list right in front of me, that they've only targeted one M7 program. The rest are in that sort of top 10, top 16 bracket, which are all, and they're all very good programs, can absolutely enable this candidate to do what they want to do. But even if they don't consider Wharton to be a close-knit community, I would encourage them to add one or two more M7. Because if you only apply to one M7, your risk of getting, you know, cut out of the M7 is going to be a lot higher than if you apply to two or three in that bracket, or in that tier, I should say, and using the same terms we usually use. Seek out, you know, if you're going to apply to Sloan, seek out, maybe apply, consider Wharton, maybe Kellogg, and whatever. And if you want to end up in the Northeast, Kellogg's going to give you a pathway there, for sure. So I think you make a good point though, Graham.
Yeah. All right. So I think enough said there. Appreciate that person's kind words about the podcast. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has 7 schools on the target list. Let's see. She's got Carnegie Mellon, Duke, Georgetown, HEC Paris, Kellogg, USC Marshall, and Yale. She wants to start school next fall. And she's been working in healthcare and nonprofit, and she'd love to move into consulting or maybe kind of nonprofit social impact type work post-MBA. Companies on her target list are Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Bain, BCG, Deloitte, McKinsey. Her GRE score is a 322. She has a 3.57 undergraduate GPA, 5 years of work experience, and she's located in India. and would love to land in the U.S. after business school. She mentions in the notes that she is a female dental surgeon. So that's how I knew it was a woman. And with a history of working with the government, running a clinic, and now working as a project manager in a public health nonprofit. And so, you know, she's obviously had a lot of interesting work, and she even mentions that COVID has presented some challenges, and she's got good recs coming. So what do you make of this candidate? We don't see too many dental surgeons applying to business school, let alone, you know, dental surgeons who are in India and female, right? So what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, just for the little information that we gather on ApplyY when they give us, you know, the notes section or whatever, I have to say I absolutely love, with a capital L, this work experience. If it's half of what it sounds like, it just sounds super interesting. And again, we've talked about this a little bit before. It'd be the sort of candidate I'd love to sit down and maybe share a cup of coffee if they don't want to share a beer with me. I don't know if everybody wants to drink beer like I do. But really sort of talk about some of these experiences. And clearly with the COVID pandemic on top of, you know, normal life, running a clinic in, I think, rural India, but I forget if it's rural or urban India. But you know, in normal circumstances, I'm sure it's a fascinating experience. With COVID, I'm sure it's been, a surreal experience. So that side of the application, I really love. And I encourage this candidate to really focus. Not really focused, but make sure that long-term goal, or I didn't, you know, I shouldn't say it like that because it sounds like I'm trying to make her say stuff that's not real, but like I asked her what her long-term goal is, because I didn't quite mesh with me this idea that you've run a clinic in India, you're doing really good stuff, but yet your life goal is to just go to the States, use the MBA and get to the States. So I asked her what her long-term goal is, and she said it is to come back to India, working in sort of public health or whatever it might be.
Right.
So to me, if that's genuinely correct, that the potential for her to be a real high-impact alum, i.e. make a real impact in the long run in her communities, is super, right? So making sure that that anchors the story, that the admissions readers clearly understand that's her mission in life, that's what she wants to do, this is what she's done to date, and this is why getting the MBA now and then working in the States for a couple of years or whatever it is makes perfect sense. And if she puts it all together like that, I think that she might be undershooting her, you know, which schools to apply, although obviously Kellogg's in there, that's a very good school. But I don't think she's being overly ambitious with the school selection. The school selection is pretty diverse, certainly from a geographic standpoint anyway. The one thing that we did talk about a little bit, and I'll turn it back to you, Graham, is this 322 GRE. If that was in the mid-320s, upper-320s, I'd be like, wow, this person definitely ticks all the boxes, and with great execution on the applications could be having a great time in a very top school for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And she does mention she's going to retake the test. And I think if she were to retake the test, I mean, I noticed she has Duke and Kellogg on her list, which are, you know, noted in the healthcare space, which would be smart, because I think her long-term goal is to help. She comes from a very rural area in India that has poor healthcare, or traditionally had very poor healthcare offerings. And she wants to remedy that and has been working to do that already. But I think, you know, in the long run would love to have a major impact there. So I get, you know, staying in the States a while, pay off your debt from business school and get some really good experience. But if she wants to go long-term and, you know, be healthcare focused, or even if that consulting work in the short term ends up being healthcare focused, going to an MBA program that's got a strength in that domain would be really useful. And so, you know, I think if the GRE comes out a little bit higher, or even if it doesn't, I can't help but wonder whether she should be looking at the healthcare management program. That's the only major at Wharton that you have to pre-declare when you're applying. It's kind of a unique program, might fit her.
Yeah.
I'd also want to know, what's driving the other schools' that are on the list, because it is, there's a range of schools, and but I do like this candidate. I think that she could have a ton to offer. But I, you know, it's funny, you were saying how she would tick all the boxes if the GRE was a bit higher. I agree. But you also made the really salient point of she'd have the ingredients, but then, you know, she's still got to make the recipe. Yeah. And sometimes I think people fall flat when it comes to, you know, being skilled at articulating their plan and their interest in an MBA and you know, kind of putting it all together. So again, I think this is a competitive candidate and I, you know, wish her the best of luck. And, but yeah, it'd be great if the GRE comes up a bit or it'll make her job a little bit easier.
Yeah. And like you say, if she gets in that mid 320s, upper 320s or whatever it is, then absolutely it would be foolish if Wharton's not on the list. Not that we have to talk about Wharton on every candidate.
I know.
Although we are passionate Wharton cheerleaders, let's sure. not beat around the bush. But, yeah, with this person can be making a long-term impact, and that's what business schools are seeking.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So without further ado, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person has 5 schools on their list. They include Dartmouth, Duke, Kellogg, UVA, and Yale. They want to start next fall. They've been working in business development for a tech company, and they want to move into consulting, and they'd love to land at one of the big guns, so Bain, BCG, or McKinsey. GMAT score 720, GPA is 3.3, and they've got 3 years of work experience. They're located in Connecticut and would love to land in Boston, but they claim they're not super picky. And again, they elaborate in the notes that they've got 3 years of experience working in kind of biz dev and sales at a tech consulting company. They've had a number of pretty important milestones and you know, some leadership that they detail in the notes. I'm not going to get into all of it. We might discuss it a bit here. But the main thing that they're wondering, I mean, obviously, you know, like what are their chances? And they're thinking that getting into consulting in the short term and then long term, doing something more focused on social impact, like, you know, UNICEF or Gates Foundation. And they elaborate to say that they come from a military family where everyone kind of joined the services and gave back that way. And they feel like their way to give back might be by working in a global NGO. And they mentioned that they already do some work with the military in terms of spreading awareness of veteran suicide. They work with the local veterans home that's you know, in their town and at a base nearby as well. So that's the background. What do you make of this candidate? Because I think on some levels there's aspects that are pretty plain vanilla, like, you know, they're currently kind of in a consulting role. They want to go to MBB. The numbers are sort of middle of the road. But what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, numbers are middle of the road for top tier schools, Graham. Let's not
yes, sorry.
Be too down on this candidate. Biz dev, I love that. I mean, it is a fancy word for sales, right?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, clearly, you know, these types of sales, it is super important. So I get the impact that they can have in their role, and they've talked about the amount of business they've driven and so on and so forth. That's very good. There's some similar characteristics, frankly, this candidate to the first candidate we discussed, in terms of they've only 3 years of work experience in terms of length. The actual experience itself looks pretty good. Impact's going to be very important. Make sure they can nail the why now and their plan. This is where I'm a little bit nervous about this candidate, in terms of, you know, their long-term goal is social impact, and this stems from their family, you know, having military background in their family, and, you know, they're doing some volunteer work now in that regard. But I found the notion of this sort of long-term goal to be a little bit vague. It was like, well, it might be UNICEF, or it might be, I don't know, the WFF or whatever acronym you can come [S2] Right. [S1] Up with that's an important NGO. So I'd like to see a little bit more, you know, focus there potentially in terms of what particular type of NGO, what sort of social impact do you feel that you're equipped to help serve best, and that sort of thing. I really do like this idea that they volunteer, you know, on the military side in terms of probably what is fundamentally a super important issue in terms of a veteran suicide. I'd like to know more in terms of what they do in that regard. I mean, are they simply offering up their hours in terms of, you know, showing up at a shelter and supporting it? Or are they actually, is their impact a little bit higher in terms of actually doing stuff, planning stuff, making a deeper impact? If it's the latter, then I'm really starting to get super interested in this candidate. So, you know, there's a lot to like. But as we talked about before we came on air, I mean, they're applying to pretty decent schools. But, you know, that's still going to be challenging, even though there's a lot to like. You are going to get candidates that sort of, you know, they've got the decent GMAT score. They're, obviously, their GPA is a little bit lighter than average, but it's okay. They're a little bit light on the years of experience, but it's okay. You know, it's decent stuff, but they could blank out.
Right?
If they're not quite good enough, let's say, on their list, I'm looking at their list now, if they're not quite good enough, let's say, for Yale, then they're probably not going to be quite good enough for Tuck, Darden, and Kellogg and Duke, right? So you would blank out. So that's the trick, or that's an issue when you're applying to these top programs. So making sure there's something in this application that truly does let them stand out, so that as a reader I'm looking and be like, you know what, again, I want to have a beer with this guy, I want to hang out.
Yeah, and I think that's the main thing that I was kind of noting was that, I mean, first of all, I mean, this person, you know, reading through the details of what they do with their spare time and you know, their kind of long-term plan, it's compelling and they seem like a really good guy,
yeah.
Right? But but the issue that I was facing was I was worried that could they get lost in the shuffle, you know, kind of in terms of like where they're located, their, you know, kind of demographics, what the work they've done, the numbers. So I was just a little worried, and I see those schools all kind of clustered in the same kind of difficulty,
yeah,
you know, zone. And that's when I was like, oh, you know, should we be, you know, just making sure that this candidate is aware that, you know, it's possible to run the table just as easily as it could be to come up empty, right? So that was the one thing. And I think you hit the nail on the head, though, that what they need to do is tell the kind of story that'll make the AdCom want to, you know, sit down and have a beer or a cup of coffee or whatever with them. And I think it's in there somewhere. They just need to work at it to bring it forward. You know, obviously it'd be good to know more about, like, you know, the GPA and it, as you said, it's just a tad light, but you know, it'd be good to know like where did they go,
yeah,
to school and,
yeah,
and what did they major in, all that kind of stuff. So there are a lot of pieces here that we don't have in the puzzle, but overall, you know, I think this person, it's going to come down to the storytelling and how they piece it all together. I did want to mention that they indicated in their notes somewhere, they said, love the podcast. Thanks for everything you guys do. Maybe they don't like us as much now because we're kind of sounding the alarm about, you know, do they have too risky of a strategy? But I think the other thing, having only a few years of experience, could mean that they're saying, you know what, I'm going to roll the dice this year and I'll reapply next if it doesn't work out, which is, you know, that's a strategy that others have employed in the past. So that's possible,
yeah,
too. But again, it's possible.
And frankly, this person's experience, I think, is probably pretty good, despite it only being 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So some of it will also depend on the quality of the recommendations that support this, right?
Yeah.
Now, if they're at a firm that's not traditionally an MBA feeder, just making sure your recommenders really understand the depth of support that they need to provide to create a great recommendation.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you're in a consulting firm or an investment bank or whatever, they know how to write those recommendations. They went to business school. Everybody's done it. But if this firm isn't, you know, overly endowed with the MBA culture, that might be something to sort of bear in mind. It's not good enough just to say that you're better than the average person that's been in this role.
Right.
But it's got to be supported with really good evidence.
Yeah, and I will say maybe we're underselling the work experience because they did note in their entry that they, you know, they lead a team that's a national team. They've got like 10 people that they're responsible,
yeah,
for,
yeah,
on that. So I think, yeah, there is a lot to like. I just want to really push this person to do a good job in the essays,
yeah,
and rec letters and interviews so that all these great attributes come to the fore and they stand out.
Yeah. And you know, again, my fear here is the goals don't make them stand out, right? So the you know we talked about the previous candidate potentially going back to India, making a huge impact in their rural communities with healthcare. This person can ultimately do it in social impact. That's what they're looking at. But I didn't feel that the pathway had been completely thought through, and maybe it's just something more to contemplate. Now, it might be that a reader reads it and absolutely sees that pathway and it makes perfect sense to them. But the next reader might be me, who waffles a little bit on it. So just making sure that I can get that passion, that's really important when you're looking at that long-term goal, I think.
Yeah, agreed, absolutely. So a lot to work with here. Again, I feel like, you know, all the candidates today have the ingredients. They just got to work on making the recipe, maybe with a slight exception of getting that GRE up in the second candidate we talked about. But in any event, Alex, thanks for picking these out, as always. And yeah, stay tuned. We've got some really fun one-off podcast episodes coming up. I sat down with a Kellogg grad who's an entrepreneur. I sat down with a career services director at a leading school. So we've got some cool kind of one-off episodes coming up. Otherwise, we'll be back in 1 week's time to do another Wiretap. So appreciate all your time, Alex, and we'll talk to everybody soon.
Very good. Thank you very much, Graham. Stay safe, everybody, and best of luck. Take care.